So welcome, everybody. This is we have this unenviable spot, the last session of the last day. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed. I'm getting some feedback in the back, if you could, from here. But thank you all for coming, and we are really excited to talk about the hybrid cloud. My name is Vishwas Lele from Applied Information Sciences, and I have with me Jack O'Connell. Jack.
I'm Jack O'Connell. I work for Applied Information Sciences, and I'm an infrastructure consultant.
So, you know, this is going to be an interesting session. Jack and I have worked here for a long time, and, you know, my background over the last many years has been application development, mainly. And then I've been working on the cloud for the last 7-8 years or so. And I realized maybe 3 years back or so that, you know, in order to be successful with the cloud, you need to have a deeper understanding of sort of the infrastructure part. You may be an application guy, but in order to be successful, you need to, you know, not just know your latest Angular 2 and stuff like that, you also need to know all sort of the infrastructure stuff. And somebody who's really helped me along in that journey is my co-speaker, Jack. Jack and I have worked together for many, many years, too many years to count, maybe 20 plus years together. And Jack is one of the best infrastructure architects I know, and he has really helped me understand sort of the Azure infrastructure. So together we are here to talk about one of the topics that are so important in the cloud. If you're doing public cloud, chances are that you are doing hybrid cloud, no question about it. Because you are not likely to, no matter how many capabilities are available in the cloud, you're unlikely to just move all your applications to the cloud. You are going to have to do some kind of portfolio analysis. You're going to have to look at your applications and see which makes sense to move in the cloud and which ones don't. And consequently, you're going to have some sort of hybrid setup. So we are here to talk about how some of those hybrid scenarios are enabled in the context of Azure Gov. And as you can imagine, this is going to be a mix of application and sort of infrastructure piece. So you'll see Jack and me tag teaming as we show you this. So here's the quick agenda. I'm going to talk about hybrid cloud adoption. I don't think I need to convince you much why hybrid cloud is important. We'll talk about why hybrid cloud. I just sort of motivated that topic, but we'll talk a little bit more about it. We will talk about some of the use cases. You know, the first three slides we'll go through very quickly. The fourth and fifth slides are really where the heart of the presentation is. We've built a reference demo, which includes many pieces of the hybrid architecture. And what we will do is, once we present the reference architecture, what we'll do is for the remainder of the session, we will pick one demo, look through some concept slides, go actually see that in action, come back, look at the next concept slide, look at and see that in action. Because I strongly believe that in order to understand any new technology, just doing enough concept slides, maybe one or two, and then watching that in action together really helps you understand that. So we'll be iterating through this pattern of a concept slide demo for the remainder of the session. So hybrid adoption, These are numbers that I got from, you know, the Microsoft side, Gartner. You can go to any of those think tanks out there, and you will see that hybrid adoption is really high. In fact, there is a, you know, RightScale study of public cloud. They do this survey every year, and the numbers where most CIOs would think of public cloud. By the way, that decision, that battle is already done. You know, in 2016 and 2015, we used to talk about, you know, public cloud or private cloud. I think that decision is already made. But most CIOs or decision makers are looking at some sort of a hybrid cloud. So this survey that came out recently, 88% of the organizations are looking at some public cloud capacity. 82% are looking at some kind of a cloud hybrid strategy. And when we look at the reasons, it'll become very obvious. And 74% of think that, you know, hybrid cloud is eventually their medium of growth in public cloud. So this is the sort of the why slide. And then backing up these numbers in the why slide, let's sort of, you know, break it down into why these CIOs think that hybrid is an important sort of determiner for moving to the public cloud. So one is dynamic capacity. So you are running some kind of a workload in your data center, and we have many customers who think that, you know, we have these large data centers, we have invested a lot of energy and money in setting them up, and they are meeting our needs, and that's fine. But many of those same customers are coming back to us and saying that, you know, for that short period of time, I want to spike my workload or burst my workload out to the cloud, right? So I want that dynamic capacity. I want this ability to scale up to the cloud. And we have a customer here in the DC area. They do a lot of these actuarial calculations, run almost entirely for 11 months out of the year in their data center, but then are looking to burst out to the cloud where they retain the existing infrastructure on-prem, but just dynamically scale and burst out to the cloud. Then we have, of course, the data sensitivity. We have customers who are running the scaled components in the cloud, but then using some kind of network connectivity option to leave their data on-prem because of some data concern or sensitivity concern. Okay. Then you have global reach. It is not uncommon to talk to customers who want to deploy their applications in different parts of the world. Because of geopolitical reasons, you have German companies wanting to retain data in Germany. You may have the same set of applications, but that application may be, you know, a copy of that application may run in North America, a copy of that application may run in Germany, or some other regional data center. And this is a great way to sort of scale this out in that manner. Number four is new capabilities. And, you know, by opening this hybrid channel, and this is a very important point, and Jack and I were just preparing for this session, and we kept reminding ourselves about the different capabilities. One of them came up was that you'll see shortly, is there is a hybrid management capability in the form of a tool called OMS. There are other tools as well, but we will just use that as an example. And because there is a cadence of release available in the cloud, because new capabilities appear in the cloud at a faster speed, by opening up a hybrid channel to the cloud, you have put yourself in a position where you can take advantage of these new capabilities. Okay? And you will see that through some of these demos. And then the last, but not the least, I talked about this. Most large organizations are doing some sort of an application portfolio analysis, and saying, you know, this is a critical application, and I really want to double down on this application. Maybe I want to manage it on-prem because I want to put more resources on it. This is an application where I need large compute capability. I want to move it to the public cloud, but I want this hybrid connectivity channel between them. So these are some of the reasons why hybrid is becoming more and more important. So moving on, let me sort of take this previous slide, which is more conceptual in nature, and tie it to some real technologies as we sort of changing gears here as we move towards more demos. So if you look at this diagram from, or this table from bottom up, this is the order that we will progress. So first and foremost, how do you extend your data center out to the cloud? You have to have some sort of network connectivity. And that's where the networking layer comes in. And there are a number of different options. Of course, you can set up a site-to-site VPN. You know, for if you have loads that are latency sensitive, high throughput, you maybe you want some sort of an express route MPLS circuit. Or maybe you are moving your applications to an exchange provider, which has the, so Azure has moved the edge into the exchange provider. So that's the networking part. Then you move up. Anytime you think about the hybrid cloud, you want to make sure that the tools that you are using to manage these are sort of the same tools, irrespective of where your workloads are running. And this seems to be a really important principle. If you have two separate set of tools to manage two different on-prem and data in the cloud, that's going to be difficult. And we will talk about things like OMS and App Insight that sort of unify the management across on-prem and the cloud. Then I want to talk about identity, which is essentially projecting your on-premises identity into the cloud. And that's where AD Connect and tools like that come into play. app integration, and this is the one that will require some more explanation. When I was putting this slide together, app integration was, you know, you have set up networking, you have set up some sort of management, and now you have two apps talking to each other. Okay, how do you integrate these two apps? And you know, I did this talk last year, and there's a sort of fundamental shift in how the app integration comes into play. So last year when I gave this talk, I was talking about something like a Windows Service Bus, which was an on-premises variant of Service Bus. And then, of course, in the cloud, you have the Azure Service Bus. And then we had conducted a demo where, you know, you might want to run Azure Windows Service Bus on-prem, and then Azure Service Bus in the cloud, and then connect the two together. Microsoft, a few months back, made a decision that they are not going to support Windows Service Bus going forward. Well, they support Windows Service Bus. I should be careful in how I describe it. But they're going to be putting all their energies in developing Azure Service Bus. Okay, and so they are focusing on more open protocols. And the idea is that you can take any of those protocol compliant stacks and connect it to Azure Service Bus. So that's the app integration story. So now we have talked about networking, we've talked about control, we've talked about apps. Next comes the database. And there's some really cool concepts here which you may have read about, and we have a demo for you. Something called the StretchDB, which is really about taking your database and essentially enabling a cold storage for your database without all of the impediments that you face typically with the cold storage. What do I mean by cold storage? You have a million rows in the table or 10 million rows in the table. And maybe you're only working with the last 10% of the data, but you sometimes need to go access the remaining portion of the data. So today, what do? You put it in some sort of cold storage. You put it in tape backups maybe, or you put it in some sort of a cold storage where you have, takes some retrieval time of a few hours. A stretch database that we'll be talking about, a feature of 2016, is you're essentially taking a table or a database and connecting to, stretching it out to the cloud, and the data in the cloud is constantly available to you. You don't have those hours of retrieval times associated with that. The other thing we will talk about, and there's another demo about that, is there's high availability groups that many of you are already familiar with, and there have been some enhancements of 2016. And what we would like to also show you there is the ability to set up synchronous and asynchronous secondaries in the cloud. So you may have a replica on-prem, and you might have a replica in the cloud, and then fail over if need be. Then, you know, moving up, we'll talk a little bit about backup and DR solutions. We'll talk about things like Azure Backup, which, you know, you can take. You may be running an on-prem workload, maybe you have a file system on-prem, you're trying to back them up in the cloud. We'll talk a little bit about site recovery, which is really about replicating your virtual machines across into the cloud. And you know, you have both the scenarios. You can replicate across two data centers, cloud or not, or you can, of course, replicate your on-site virtual machines to the cloud. And then we'll talk a little bit about storage, but we don't have a demo associated with that, but it suffice to understand that Store Simple is an appliance that you can drop in your data center and then start writing to it and then turn some knobs. And based on how, you know, when you want to send the data to the cloud, based on the settings you have made, it will transparently send the data out to the cloud. And that's the Store Simple appliance. So, this slide essentially talks about the technologies that we'll be leveraging for the remainder of this presentation. So I showed you the previous slide just to remind you. We talked about why hybrid, and then sort of transitioned into the technologies that map to these reasons here. Okay. So Jack, do you mind bringing up this Visio diagram, because we have changed it? You probably saw us, you know, struggling changing laptops here because of the connectors. And I think you have the latest version of the slide. So if you could just bring it up on your screen. I think it might be, you might want to do this. Oh, here. Yeah. And just go into a duplicate mode here. Yep. Perfect.
It's a little small.
Can you zoom into it a little bit for me? So busy looking diagram, but I promise I'll break it down for you. So this is our reference architecture, and you don't have to understand every single line. Let me just call out some important pieces, but we will come back to this diagram often enough for you to understand it better. Let's start with the bottom part of the diagram. This represents our on-prem system. And for the purposes of this session, our on-premises data center is Jack's laptop here. Okay? So it is running a bunch of tools here. It is running a database, which will be stretched out to the cloud. It is running a few other things. It has some Hyper-V machines, which are being backed up to the cloud. But for the purposes of this presentation, this is our on-premises portion of this topology here. If you move up, Jack, all the things up in this diagram represent what is available in Azure as far as we have set up for the demo. And in order to make things interesting, what we have done, thank you, what we have done is, if you stop scrolling, I can just talk about it. So I can, you know, Jack and I have worked for a long time, so I can be rude with him and say, you know, Jack, please stop scrolling. And that's sort of the difference. That's, you know, you will see some interesting dynamic between a developer and IT pro. I was expecting him to actually, you know, put on a suit and a tie and come. And that's fine. So if you, now that you have stopped scrolling, I can stop, you know, start describing this. So this is the configuration in Azure, okay? And there are two stacks here. On the left-hand side of the screen, that stack is in Azure East, okay? And the right-hand side of the stack is everything on Azure West, okay? And that's all I wanted, essentially. But Jack, being the Uber IT pro, he did not leave. He said, Vishwas, what we need to do here, if we want to take that subscription and break it down into two subscriptions. And do you know why? Because there's a very good reason why. Because the bottommost subscription, so there in total there are four subscriptions. You're right. There are two subscriptions, but the subscription at the bottom is sort of the shared services subscription, where we have all of the services which are common, which are not sort of specific to any application, okay? So thank you for correcting me. So the bottom part of the diagram is a subscription where we have all of the shared services, things like site recovery, things like backup, things like OMS, all of those are configured as part of this subscription. And then on top, we have another subscription which has our application installed, the databases, the always-on clusters, and things like that, okay? So So that's how we have broken things up. And, you know, initially when Jack called me and said he's going to break it up into two subscriptions, I was saying, why wouldn't it be confusing? And he brought up an important point that, you know, when we are doing hybrid, you are typically trying to mimic all of the fidelity of your on-premises environment, right? In your on-premises environment, you typically segment your network, right? You typically have, you know, go to any enterprise networking segmentation approach, and you will find that you've broken it up into trusted, untrusted, semi-trusted zones. Your database is in a full trust zone. You have web servers in a semi-trusted zone, or an application server in a semi-trusted zone. So you typically see these network segmentation strategies. And what we wanted to call out, and I essentially agreed with Jack, is we want to show you that this hybrid is only made possible because you have the capabilities, essentially, to have the same fidelity as you had in your on-prem environment, okay? So that's an important point to make here. So all the shared services go in one subscription, and that subscription is stretched across east-west, and then you have the app subscription, which is also stretched between east and west, and where our application is residing. Our application is just a toy application that we wrote just to show you enough, but you can replace it with any application that you may have, okay? Makes sense? Can I let you just squint at this diagram for 30 seconds and just understand this, absorb this, because I'm going to ask you questions about these. And I didn't even bother explaining the diagrams, some of these lines, sorry. Those will become clear as we go through the demos, okay? Now, yes, question, Aaron.
Are there two Active Directories, or are those the same Active Directory?
Just the same
Active. Same Active Directory.
So there's Azure Active Directory that's integrated with each with the subscriptions, and that's a single Azure Active Directory tenant. And then there's Active Directory in the environment that's actually lives in the shared services subscription along with DNS.
Yeah.
In both regions.
So makes sense, right? I mean, and this is, I just want to emphasize this point. This may look difficult, but I think in the end, you will be benefited from this diagram because this is the kind of setup you likely to see in your agency, whether it's a public sector, large enterprise. This is the kind of setup that you would expect, will likely to see ultimately. So, no, that's fine. I do need to go back here, Jack. Thank you for that. So you can see, as an app developer, I drew this diagram, and the diagram that I ended up showing you was the diagram that Mr. IT Pro drew, okay? And you can see how developers and IT pros think differently. My diagram was very logical, interface-driven, and, he'll get his turn to talk and make fun of me as well, so.
Vishwas's fit on a PowerPoint presentation, mine did not, so.
So are you saying that my stuff is only for PowerPoint and your stuff is for real stuff?
No, I'm trying to put all these different things in a diagram.
Okay, all right.
You're
okay.
Being reasonable.
Okay,
about
okay.
It.
You will get a chance to make fun of me when you get to speak. Let me just finish the next couple of slides. Okay, so here are a couple of concept slides, I promised, and then we will show you the actual demo. So in order to understand this, you know, you saw this big picture, but let me bring out some of the technologies that went into making that picture, okay? So here's the Azure data center, and inside the data center, there's something called the VNet. You know, I want to make sure I'm throwing out terms, and I've just explained them very quickly. Think of VNet as, you know, Azure data center is a flat network. Think of VNet as a virtual overlay, your enclave in that data center. So that's the Azure VNet. And then what you can do here is, of course, you know, if you have users coming in from the internet, they can come in through the public route, the front-end access, and then you have all of these capabilities. You have the DNS, you have load balancing, you have DDoS protection, all of that, right? But many customers who are doing hybrid don't allow people to come in through this route. In fact, they are using something called the forced tunneling, which means that all access to Azure-hosted machines is through this backend route, which means they've set up some sort of an express route, a site-to-site VPN, some sort of a gateway, and that's what allows them access to their Azure resources. Okay? That's an important point to make. The other important point to make is you're able to project your IP address range up in the cloud, so you can have, you know, more consistency in how your network is laid out. So that's sort of the big picture in terms of how you have the backend connectivity in terms of Express Route. This is a better picture of Express Route. You can see here, the only other interesting thing I want to call out here is many of the Azure services are available directly at the VNet level. So you spin up a VM, it is directly connected to the virtual network, right? And in the previous slide, I talked about how you can have, you know, you can force everybody to come through an express route and go to these virtual machines. But then there are services in Azure which are only available on public endpoints. Azure SQL Database, Azure Storage, Service Bus, there are many services that are available on public endpoints. So how do you access those services in the context of express route? So you can see I have two channels depicted here. The blue line is going from a customer's network through an MPLS provider onto a VNet connected service. And then you have the purple line in the middle, which is also traversing the same route, but then the express route is taking your packets all the way to Azure and then dropping them on Azure's edge. Okay? And that's public-private peering is available through Express Route, and this will become important as part of hybrid cloud. This is an important concept to understand. And these are the Azure Gov Express Route providers available today. This list keeps growing. Last two concepts before we'll show you a demo, I promise. So we had two subscriptions, remember, and we had multiple virtual networks. How do we connect the virtual networks? So we can do a VNet to VNet connection. In fact, this is what we are using to connect the two virtual networks that are one in the East Coast, one in the West Coast. We are doing a VNet to VNet connection. And this is the new concept that came about a few months back, I want to say. Jack, does that sound right? VNet peering?
Yeah.
VNet peering is a fairly new concept where you can connect two VNets in the same region. The benefit is that you can actually go on the Azure backbone. So it's really a low latent way of connecting the VNets. So that's VNet peering. And the last thing I want to say, the last slide related to networking is, once again, if you're coming from an enterprise background or working with a large agency, not only do you have network segmentation, you have screens between each of these subnets. And the way to enable that in Azure is something called the network security groups. So you have VNets broken up into subnets, and then you have network security groups. So with that, Jack, can you show us how the network connectivity was set up in our reference architecture, please?
So I'd also like to mention with peering, if you have a V2 environment, you can peer across subscriptions. But with V2 and V1, you cannot peer across subscriptions today. So that's a typical question that comes up with peering a lot. So in this case, since we're using V2, we can peer across subscriptions. So basically what we did, do you want me to talk about? I'll walk the whole thing.
I think showing the networking portions, all the logging into various machines and just showing them the various paths would be a good idea, Jack, I think.
Just get on with the demo.
Yep.
All right, so we have VNet to VNet gateways. We have a gateway set up between these two VNets in each region, as Vishwas mentioned. So we have a VNet to VNet connection between the regions. And then within each region, we have VNet peering set up between the app VNet and the shared services subscription VNet. And then, of course, as we described on-prem, we're using a point-to-point, point-to-site connection to allow the machine I'm demoing with to get access to Azure. As Vishwas mentioned, we could do site-to-site VPNs or express route circuits as well. So let me go ahead and bring up our on-prem box. This is a virtual machine that I'm running on my in Hyper-V on my local box, right here, the SQL box. And it's using point-to-site. So it's got a network connection, and it's also got a VPN connection. And you can see its IP address here is 10.2.128.5, again, with the technical information. And it's got a local IP address as well, through my laptop and its network connection. So from here, I'm able to ping into Azure. And for example, I'm going to go ahead and ping into an IIS server that's in this untrusted subnet in the application VNet, which is in the application subscription. I'm being a little wordy today. So you can see that I can simply just connect right away through ping to that application server without any problems whatsoever. So then I can also RDP directly. Vishwas mentioned closing out public endpoints. Using things like forced tunneling. So if you do things like that, you could simply use this as a way to get into the box that's running in Azure in the VNet. So this is my server that's running in this VNet right here, and I just connected to it from the on-prem environment without going over the internet directly for RDP. So then also we have, here's the box I'm running in Azure. And we can do the opposite. We can ping straight back to the box on-prem and connect to it. And we can also map a drive. That was quick.
That was quick.
I think it was already up in my window. I can just go ahead and refresh it. That's quick. So I'm able to connect not only from, you know, the on-prem box to Azure, I'm actually able to connect the other way also. And this becomes important later on in one of our other demos.
So Jack, let me just, you know, break this apart for mere mortals like me, because, you know, he used a lot of terms which, you know, I struggle to understand, but since I've been hanging out with him, I understand a little bit better. So what was interesting is, considering that this laptop is the on-premises representation in that diagram, and Jack, if you could bring up where you set up the P2S, I think it'll be important. There are a number of different ways we could have connected the on-prem laptop to Azure. We could have set up an express route, a site-to-site. We wanted the easiest way to do that so that we could actually show you. Jack and I have done this demo a few times where we have an express route circuit connected to one of our locations. But for this demonstration, it was easy enough to come in and set up a P2S connection. So Jack, if you could show us the P2S connection. So essentially, this laptop is VPNed into Azure. And keep me honest, Jack, and the first demo that you conducted was you brought up a virtual machine on this laptop, and then basically, you know, did a ping against an IP address of a machine in Azure East.
Correct. Right?
That was the first demo. And the second demo was you RDP'd into Azure over P2S, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the way back, pinged the machine that was running on his laptop. So it was a round-trip configuration. And what is interesting is this Azure enclave where he has all these machines is not open to any outside internet traffic, and that's an important point to understand. So go ahead, please.
Yeah, so this is where you actually do the configuration of point to site. So I basically navigated to my virtual network and then to the gateway. Which is, you need a gateway to be able to configure point to site and IPsec tunnel from VNet to VNet connectivity and express route. So I went ahead and configured a point to site configuration, which basically creates the tunnel, and you basically swap certificates. So it's using certificates also to protect the connection, as you do with any VPN. So it's as simple as that. It's not very complicated to set up. You do have to dedicate an IP address pool for that. So you want to make sure you have an address, set aside an address, and it's not going to overlap with your networking. So in Azure, I have different IP address ranges, and this one does not overlap with any other IP address. So there's a lot of planning that goes into this. To make sure that all of it's mapped out correctly.
And it's fair to say that once, you may be thinking, some of the developers in the room may be thinking, well, how does it impact me when you know, I'm writing an ASP.NET application that may be running as a web app in Azure, and I'm trying to connect it to a database on-prem, perhaps, or maybe a mainframe system on-prem. And how does all the things that Jack is showing me apply to me? Well, once the P2S channel has been established, that sort of connectivity is there, and your application can then go talk to an on-prem data source of some sort. So do you want to quickly also show, maybe in a diagram, how the pairing works? I think you had a couple of other diagrams, right? Just very quickly how...
I broke it down into the different...
You broke it down into smaller diagrams. Maybe that'll be a good idea to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simplistic. I mean, you basically, for the gateways, again, you make sure that you don't have overlapping IP addresses, and even the gateway requires its own subnet, and that's a /28 subnet for those who care. And you basically establish connectivity in both directions from your VNets. So you need a dynamic gateway so that the routing is taken care of for you. You can't use a static gateway to be able to route the way we are in this demo. But with the point to site, I just explained it. I mean,
okay.
The point to site is connected to the gateway.
So
in
let
the
me
east.
Let me get control back. So that is the basic connectivity. Let's just go back here. My slides. The next sort of, once we have established how the networking works, Let's just talk about the management tools. And I want to talk a little bit about, there are a number of tools available out there which can allow you to have a single pane of glass management. And we, as part of this demo, set up something called the OMS service. And I just want to talk about quick capabilities of OMS, and then we will show this to you in action. So OMS is a collection of services, and it offers things that are shown here in the diagram. So it offers process automation and configuration management. So what is interesting is that OMS can allow you to manage your on-prem resources and even manage resources from other clouds. And we are seeing a lot of that. We are seeing multi-cloud scenarios. So you may have some machines, maybe in AWS, maybe in some of your private data center. OMS can allow you to manage these machines in a single management screen. So that's one thing. And what is also interesting is you can probably see in this diagram right here, something called the hybrid worker. So as part of OMS, you can execute desired state configuration jobs across your on-prem machines and, of course, machines in Azure. And the way you execute jobs on-prem is this notion of a hybrid worker. So you essentially have a hybrid worker located on-prem, which can then execute the jobs that are associated with your on-prem infrastructure. Okay? So that's the notion of the hybrid worker. So you can do process automation. You can have your runbooks. You can say you want to orchestrate the provisioning of this infrastructure. You can do configuration management, the desired state configuration files, for example. You can do update management. We'll be showing you a demo of that, of how you can patch these machines, whether on-prem or in the cloud. And of course, you can do Windows or Linux machines. So Jack, do you want to quickly show a demo of that, please?
Sure. I've also got the Azure Site Recovery.
Yep.
So Vishwas was talking about the OMS. When you talk about OMS, you also have to talk about log analytics, which is basically how you collect all the information and it feeds OMS. So with OMS, you basically create an OMS workspace, and then you basically go ahead and connect all your machines that you won't wish to manage. Thank you for reminding me. So you can connect all the machines in that you want to manage to log analytics so that you can go ahead and start collecting information on them.
And this list, I assume, includes your on-prem machine as well, right? The AGE one?
Well, we are collecting log analytics
right
with it.
Yep, we are connecting. Yep. Right there in the second last, yeah. Just above the last red mark. So that's log analytics.
And so basically you set that up and you can then go into your OMS portal. And OMS basically has the concept of solutions. So you can deploy different types of solutions and be able to have nice console. So there's a solution gallery, and you can install the different aspects that you'd like to into the environment. And I've installed several of them. You can see that some of them say owned, some of them will say available. So the ones that basically say owned, I've configured already. So here's my, the portal route, and you can see that a number of different types of solutions that I've applied here. The one that Vishwas mentioned, I don't know if it was last, but update management is right here. Can you guys see that okay? Or do I need to pop it up a little bit better? And you can see different types of information about the patch assessment for these boxes. And again, like Vishwas mentioned, we've got ones in Azure, and then you can see the last one there is the one that's on-prem.
So it is applying patches to all the machines across the two environments, right?
Right.
and it is showing you the status of that. Yeah, Naveen, question.
So OMS is equivalent to SCOM and on-prem? Is that what it is?
So OMS, I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, yes. It's providing a lot of the same capabilities that SCOM provides and SCCM, right?
But it is a hosted service, right? And all of the later capabilities, like Jack is talking about log analytics, patch management. So you have a hosted service that is then allowing you to manage on-prem, Azure, and other cloud resources all in one. So there are some connectors, a SCOM connector for OMS. So you can send your data there as well, and then sort of integrate that data into OMS as well. So makes sense. Good question. Go ahead.
We did a demo a while back, and we talked very similar demo, and we talked about your question. We had Data Protection Manager installed. We had SCOM installed. We had all the on-prem tools installed. I would say this demo is kind of the transformation of infrastructure in Azure, so that we're now leveraging services in Azure to be able to manage the boxes.
And I think it's an important point to note here, because as more effort is being put in these sort of cloud-based services, you can have these cadence of releases where new features are coming along, and you don't have to manage the on-premise infrastructure to essentially monitor that infrastructure. You can have agents that send data up to OMS and then use OMS for much of this information. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the trend.
One thing we like to say is we don't have to patch our patch servers, right?
That's a good point. So that saves you from that. So you showed us the update management.
Sorry, can I ask a quick question?
Yes, please.
That's a great question. I'm not sure exactly how you can tie those products together.
So I have a slide. I'll go back to that. So you're using Splunk on-prem, right? And there are ways to send Splunk data inside OMS so it appears in this configuration.
Well, if you want to have it all in one place, I'm just curious.
Absolutely. And the OMS team has been working with a number of providers to enable that. Of course, Splunk has their public cloud too, and you have to determine what makes sense for you. But there's a way through the OMS API. There's a way to send the data to OMS as well. Yes, sir.
What was your management layer putting in a separate subscription?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
What was the management layer putting in a separate subscription?
So if you from V1, a lot of folks used subscriptions as an isolation approach for accounts, and at the time, a lot of people didn't want to put their Active Directory boxes in the same subscriptions where their workloads were placed, just because of access management. One thing we didn't talk about was RBAC. So you could absolutely use RBAC in a very similar way to isolate things like OMS and Active Directory and the other workloads that I have depicted in the shared services subscription. But you would definitely, in my opinion, want to separate out the VNets for your workloads and for your shared services and have separate NSGs and things like that, so you can apply policy better and share those services across all your different application workloads.
Let me just repeat the question this is a great question. The question was, why did you guys separate out your workload into two subscriptions, one for shared services and one for application? I agree with all the things that Jack said, more in terms of policies and segregation. But there's also one other consideration there, which is every subscription has some sort of a limits associated with that. And think of it as also a partitioning strategy in that sense. So that may be the other reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely subscription quotas. It's just a lot of folks want to separate them out that way so they can, like Vishwas just mentioned, scale differently for the different types of workloads.
So you showed the patching part.
So yeah. I didn't show the on-prem box we patched, and I just wanted to show that I scheduled a patch window for the on-prem environment. And I did that through the scheduling within the OMS. And it completed. So basically, I just wanted to show you the fact that that on-prem, I can patch on-prem boxes just like I can patch the Azure boxes as well. So
you've shown the patch management. You've shown. Can we also go into the log analytics search?
Yeah, and this is just another window that shows the dashboard.
Yep. Can zoom into it when you get into the log analytics portion.
All right. Vishwas, what specifically are you?
So I just wanted to call out that, you know, in addition to being able to do the patch management, I talked about the process automation. One thing that I also talked about was log analytics, where all of the data from your on-premises machines and Azure machines are going into a centralized log, and you can then apply search on top of that, and that's this screen right here. So you can come in here, and you know, you have unified search capability across all of the telemetry that has been collected across your hybrid cloud environment. So this makes it really easy to debug an issue. If you have a connectivity issue or a database issue or maybe an IIS server having a problem, you can come to this log and look for information, look for events, things like that. So this is the centralized search capability. Okay, so let me just go back, Jack, unless you have more things to show here.
I was just going to finish that one up.
Yes, please. Okay.
So basically, you can come in here, and then, you know, I did a search for all content, and then basically it gave me, dump the data. And for example, here I can come in, and I can target any information I want. So we talked about that on-prem server. This is it, right in the first alert. So I can go ahead and I can click on the computer object and say filter for that specific box, and then basically show all the alerts related to that server. So I think that's what you wanted me to point out.
So Jack, we have about half an hour left, and we have about three more demos to go. So we will speed it up. If you have questions, let's just hold off on the questions until about 4:20 or so. I promise to keep about 10 minutes for questions at the end. While we are talking about single pane of glass management, let's also talk about backup and DR, how you can use things like Azure Backup and Azure Site Recovery Services that work in conjunction with OMS. So let me just bring up this slide. These are the use cases that are enabled. So you can do a site-to-site or site-to-Azure, and your machines could be physical machines or virtualized machines, VMware, Hyper-V machines being backed up into Azure or the physical machines shown here on the right-hand side of the diagram here. Then you have something like called the Azure Backup and Store Simple that I talked about. Two very quick diagrams to bring out the patterns that Jack is about to show you. So one is that you have the Azure Site Recovery, and you can have an agent installed on the machine, which is then sending the data up to the cloud, or you can have equivalent for the VMware, the vCenter, or if you didn't have, maybe you have a regional office, or maybe you're dealing with a small business, then you can do an agentless sort of synchronization, but then that synchronization has to go to Azure Storage. You're not doing a hypervisor to hypervisor synchronization. So, Jack, why don't I switch over to you and quickly show us the backup and site recovery portions.
So, as Vishwas mentioned, I basically stood up a Hyper-V server. This one's another one of those, like, patching your patch servers. So I'm running Hyper-V, and within Hyper-V, I'm running a Hyper-V box. So here's my Hyper-V box, and I'm running a SQL server. It's configured. And then basically what I did was I configured the site recovery so that I could connect into that box, you can see that it's, this is the Hyper-V box that I targeted, and here's the, it enabled me to go ahead and pick the VM that was running that I could then back up. So I went ahead and configured it for backup, and here's the backup for that.
Remember to zoom in.
There's obviously, I didn't, it's not running because you can't run a Hyper-V session inside of a hypervisor. So basically I just configured it so that you could see that the agent's running on the box and I'm able to pick off the VMs that are running there so that I can back them up.
So that's the backup. How about site recovery?
Well, that's the site recovery. So I targeted a Hyper-V box.
Yep.
And then there's backups. So with the backups, same thing. I mean, you basically go into the recovery vault and configure the backups. I've targeted a box in Azure, which is my AD server, and you can see that here's the backup plan that I've configured, and you can see that it's being backed up successfully without any kind of issues at all.
Yep. So let me switch over to the next sort of demo, which is related to the database tier. And let me talk a little bit, how many of you have actually looked at StretchDB or played with StretchDB? Okay. So, you know, let's motivate why StretchDBs are needed. So you typically may have a database that has, you know, growing and growing, massive tables, millions of rows. At the same time, you want access to all of this data. You know that you're only using a small percentage of this data actively as part of your transaction, but you may need to go access that cold data, but you still need to do that in an online manner. So how do you do that? What are the sort of maintenance challenges? And you know, what are the business risks of not having that data, or what are the restore times, et cetera? And typically you solve these problems by adding more capacity in your data center. But then you have to deal with the cost issues, the management issues, and things like that. Or you move that data to some sort of a cold storage location, a tape drive perhaps, which can be more cost effective, but at the same time adds to the data recovery time. So a better solution, of course, is, and of course you don't want to delete all your old data, a better solution is to sort of stretch your data into the cloud. And the way it works is, let's say I have the order history table. I can come in here and I can say that the order history table, as the name suggests, is the table that has continued to grow and grow and grow. I'm going to, you know, run a stretch wizard, and I'm going to take this order history table and stretch that out to the cloud. Okay? And the way it works is now you can set up some parameters. And the cold data will automatically be migrated to a database out there in the cloud, okay? What is interesting is that you can, of course, talk to your database on-prem, as you would normally do. But what if an application fired a query which required to access a cold data? Then what will happen in this instance is it will determine that that data is not there in the on-premises instance. It will expand your query to go out to the cloud, get that data, join that data set with your on-prem data set, and return the data to you, okay? So that makes it really simple. So your application logic is not changing. Suddenly behind the covers is getting just the right amount of data, bringing it and sort of joining in and presenting it to you, okay? So that's the StretchDB. We'll show you this in action. Now, there are some limitations that you have to be aware of. We are talking about historical data. So it is, if you know, updates and deletes are not allowed because it really becomes hard to propagate that. But of course, you can add new records there. And also, you can actually directly go out to the cloud and query that information if you needed to do that. So that is also an option for reporting purposes and things like that. So that's the first demo. Do you want to quickly show us that, Jack?
Just give me 1 second, Vishwas.
Okay, so while you're setting up the demo, let me just talk about the second part of this demo and give you a second here to set up. So does this make sense to everybody? So StretchDB, To me, this is sort of the canonical example of how hybrid can be made to work seamlessly, right? You're still continuing to call on-prem application, but somebody under the covers is moving the data out to the cloud. Part two of this demo is involving availability groups. Many of you are using availability groups today. And we'll be showing you a demo which sort of maps like this, but there are some differences based on what we had here. So in this case, we are not running a replica based on the P2S connection. So what we ended up doing was, remember we have the East Coast and West Coast. What we did was we set up on the East Coast two replicas, and then we set up on the West Coast another replica. And what we'll show you here is we have a web application which is talking to the primary replica, and basically we created a website which is hosted on a VM inside that VNet Azure Gov region. And then what we will do as part of this demonstration is we will fail over to the west region of Azure Gov, and then we will see that application seamlessly transitions to the west region database. So that will be the second part of the demo. So Jack, are you ready to show us the Stretch DB?
Yep.
Go ahead, start with the Stretch, please.
Okay, so here I am on-prem again on my SQL server.
You can't zoom into it.
So this is the database that we were talking about. So I'm gonna go ahead and right click on it. I go to tasks, I go to Stretch, and I've already enabled that. So if you look here, it's monitoring it. And basically what you do when you enable it is you configure it, you sign in to your subscription, and you're able to either leverage a server or create a SQL server for you. And then you're able to do things like specify the firewall, provide a password, and things like that. So it's been configured. It's actively pushing the data out to the Azure SQL server and database. So it's working as it should.
And this data is encrypted, right, Jack? You have the ability to set up.
You do.
Encryption. So all of the data that is flowing to the cloud and stored in the cloud is also encrypted. This is a capability available as part of the Stretch DB.
Yep. So you do have the ability to encrypt it. So here I am, back in Azure, and here's my database. I've logged on, I've navigated to the Stretch databases, and here's my Stretch database. You can see it's being accessed. So on the Azure side, it's pretty simplistic. And as I mentioned, you can set the firewalls and things like that to control access to it.
Should we show them the web application?
Sure.
So we wrote a little web application which is using the Stretch DB, and you can zoom into this one, I think, or no. Or you brought it up inside, that's fine. I think this is
big enough.
So
go ahead, Vishwa.
Go ahead.
So basically, this is the on-prem data from the database. I think we could have done a better job of actually refreshing the data so you'd be able to see it easier. But this is the on-prem data that we're getting here, and then if I select Azure, it pretty much immediately refreshes and goes into Azure. So there's not a lot of bells and whistles on that one, but it's actually pointing to the Stretch DB. I can show you the config file if you'd like to see it.
No, we don't want to see the config file, thank you. So you get the idea. We can connect to the on-prem database, or we can connect to the Azure database. We can fire a query against on-prem, and it'll bring the data into on-prem. So that's the Stretch DB portion of the demo. Yes, sir.
The data on the Stretch DB looks really interesting and very nice concept. Theoretically, we have played around with test data and all that stuff. Do we have any sense or idea how much of this is in practical use as of today? Because I understand, maybe if I'm wrong, please correct me. This is available only from 2016 or later.
That's correct.
Real-time use, or it's still a theoretical concept?
So we can take the question is, can we talk about some practical applications of this? And I can take this offline. I've been working with customers who are dealing with cold storage data, where today they have tape-based solutions and have a four-hour window, you know. So think about a provider. They don't typically go access this data, but there is some sort of a legal query that comes in, which they are required to produce documentation for. So they make a request to the tape drives. That tape drive gets mounted and then display that data. They're actively looking at this solution. So it's a really practical solution for them because they are not updating the records. The problem comes in when updating the records. The other problem comes in when you are trying to have a table which has large number of columns greater than a certain size. Or if you have some things related to file groups, you know, you have something in your table structure that prevents it from stretching. So if those limitations are not there for the use case that you have in mind, then it becomes a really good concept. So I'm happy to talk offline about some of the scenarios. There was another hand that was raised here.
Data in transition when you use the stretch of the
feed. Yep.
If I have an Azure website on the cloud,
yep.
Send a query.
Yep.
It sends the query request to my local on-prem SQL Server engine. It needs to get the local data along with the data that's on the Azure cloud.
Yep. Yep.
Return it back to the Azure Cloud ISS site.
Yep.
And transmit it back to the user. Is that correct?
That is correct. The way you disk.
I am transmitting my data from the StretchDB twice, correct?
You're transmitting the data from.
Yeah,
that's right.
Initially to my SQL engine.
Yep. Yep.
From my SQL engine sends it back to the ISS site on the cloud. The ISS site sends it back to the user.
Yep.
So the Azure Cloud is transmitting it twice.
Right.
Same
right.
So it really depends on how you're trying to leverage the solution, right? I mean, you wouldn't necessarily want to. So you'd be writing to one, right? You basically might be taking advantage of read-only data, right? So you might want to just present the data out there and have a view of it.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to talk. Your point is valid. I completely agree with that. That if that's the scenario. That your data is on-prem and your application is in the cloud, then what you described is accurate. But you know what I'm presenting here is a way to sort of seamlessly send the data without having to manage that data. So as Jack said, maybe the way you deploy your application may be that you know a cloud-based application is accessing the StretchDB directly because it is read-only data anyways. To avoid this two-way you know, back and forth that you describe, which is accurate. So since we are running out of time, why don't we show the second demo? Because I have one other concept to talk about before we end. But good question, sir. I completely agree with that that concern that you raised.
I wonder if I can do this. Let's just do this. OK, so this is my SQL Server in the East data region. And I've gone ahead and set up SQL High Availability Groups within the region to a second SQL Server, and then across the region to a SQL Server in Central. So you can see the primaries and the secondaries there. So the idea here is that we can support failover across the data within the data center and then across the data centers. For this the demo we're doing today, we're just going to show failover across regions and not within the same data center. So within that same application, there's another tab we have, and it's SQL Always On, and basically it shows you the data in the primary and the secondary. So you can see the IP address here is in the east, and then the secondary is in the west here.
Can you
go blind on that one
can,
too?
Can you zoom into this? Just the browser. Just zoom into the browser itself.
So let's go.
Yep.
So it's on the primary, and that's what it's showing the data from, and you can see that the secondary IP as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and change one of the values in here. Real quick. We didn't even get to do my favorite demo. I'm just going to make it a accounts payable S, you know, just put an S on the end of accounts payable. You see the field there?
Yeah.
If I hit submit, you're going to go blind on that one too.
So you can zoom into this. You know, IT pros are really creative. So the thing he could change was was added a character to the end of this description. Well, does the job for the demonstration. So I'll give you that.
So that was successful in the primary. And you can see that there's now an S there.
I'm telling you, he's very creative.
So then if we go over to the, I should have showed you the secondary first.
And can you add your magical S on the secondary?
Hold on. Now, of course, I got a problem. We made fun of the demo. It's not upset. It's not, ugh.
That's fine. You can connect again. I think maybe you lost connectivity to that.
Hold on 1 second. Let me, oh. Give me 1 second, visualize if you can.
Can I talk about the last slide before you get back to you?
Please do.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, so you might have to set up the channel again. All right, so you know what Jack was just showing you, and in fact, I'm hopeful she'll show you, is that he has two replicas on the East Coast, and then he's going to shift to the West Coast region and then have the application automatically change. So we'll give him a second, and you have about 30 seconds to do this because you have about 5 minutes left, Jack.
Right, understood.
Okay, so the last topic that I want to talk about, I think I've already covered this portion. So let me just go find the last topic. How many of you have heard about Azure Stack? And there's news in this week, right? So some of you have heard of Azure Stack. So Azure Stack is Microsoft's way of shipping Azure services that can then be installed in your data center. And no presentation about hybrid can be complete without talking about Azure Stack. Preview versions have been available, and there was news this week that a newer version came out. The idea here is that you can take services like service bus storage, and you can have these services be available and installed in your data center. And what is interesting about this, you've used prior versions of Azure Stack where there was not consistency between the APIs that are available in the cloud and the APIs that are available on-prem. So if you are using things like the ARM templates to provision your infrastructure, Azure Stack essentially gives you the same fidelity to provision resources on-prem as you do it in the cloud. So that's the other pattern that we wanted to quickly talk about. And let's get back over to Jack to finish up that demo.
All right, so back, so I've cut, now I'm on the secondary. And you can see that it says account payable,
yep.
Accounts payable. As Vishwa said, I don't really have much time here. So there it is.
So it showed, that change showed up in the secondary.
Right.
Great.
So now if we go back to the primary, I'm navigating the primary. Again, 10.1.32.6 is my IP address. So I'm going to go into that server in the East Coast. I'm going to go into the West Coast server. And I'm going to go ahead and fail over my high availability groups.
So since you can't, since he has not zoomed into this, or you have, that's good. That's the failover in process.
Mm-hmm.
And
so now it's failed over. So now we're basically running on the as a primary in the central region. So if I come back to here and I refresh the screen, you'll see that the primary now says 10.11, which is my central location.
So the application was smart enough to actually, it got an error, and it retried and opened a connection.
Nope.
So.
Maybe I went too soon.
Okay, try it again, otherwise. So.
Here we go.
Cool. Do you see the change address there?
Let's see, let's go back to here.
Go back to here, and
yeah.
That looks like the change address.
Yep. So now the primary is in the central location. I pulled the trigger a little too fast. It was still replicating the data and failing over.
Right. So, okay. So with that, we are left with about 5 minutes. Any questions? Let's pause here and take questions. Does that help you with the different patterns that we talked about at the networking level, the database level, the management tier? It's sort of, these are all sort of, think of these as building blocks that allow you to build these hybrid applications. So that's really the key intent here. Yes, sir, question in the back.
In your, backed up the EDR diagram,
yep.
You should back them up in Azure in the cloud.
Yep.
A physical server, a physical Windows server, not an Azure server. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you can't back up your Windows server, 2012, for example, to the Azure cloud, and then recover.
Correct, yep. So you're basically using an agent and backing up to Azure, and then basically.
Even though local drive CMD.
Yep.
And the whole operating system, everything, and all the secure settings.
Yep.
So that when I server fail, what are you recovering from? A YAML image of it, or are you
doing a CDB? Yes. So it's using an agent. It's basically no different than using DPM on-prem, right? So. If you're using Data Protection Manager, you're basically backing up the system state, right? The C drive, the D drive, whatever data you want using that agent. So basically, it's backing up those to be recoverable in Azure, right? So you could then restore to a box using that, right? So your question is, what do you end up in Azure with? Is it a VM in Azure? So if it's a physical box, you're backing up the individual components. I'm not sure exactly if the backup agent would be able to give you a VM in the end state. There's, I'd have to take that offline and tell you what.
ASR fails into Azure, right? And you want to fail back, it fails back as a VM. So ASR does support failback, but doesn't fail back to a physical machine, right? It would fail back.
Any other questions? Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Okay, well, in that case, thank you all for coming. Thanks for the great questions. We hope you go out and build successful hybrid clouds. Thank you.
Thank you.